You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It is that hour again, the hour for both you patriots and you jackbooted thugs alike. It is the TNT Radio Show Thursday Night Truth with your host, Dale the Truth, on the My View Matters Radio Network. Lots of stuff in the news tonight. Lots of stuff in the news. We'll put the phone numbers up there out front. Just get that out there and get it over with. If we get to the calls, we do. If we don't, we don't. There's a lot of stuff to cover. Today is Thursday, March the 7th, 2013. Had to check the calendar on the Patriot calendar here because the Freedom calendar says the month is flying and the year is flying, and we are very thankful for the hundreds, sometimes thousands of listeners that we have throughout the week, both live and in the chat room and on the phone listening in and on Blog Talk Radio and on Louisville News and Politics and on Stitcher and on iTunes. Talking about 1,000 to 2,000 people a week listening to this show. We thank you for that. But if you want to call in, as always, the numbers are 858-683-1326 or in the Louisville, Kentucky area, 502-805-0334. So getting right into it, we know that there's a lot of things going on. We are very proud of our U.S. Senator Dr. Rand Paul. Very proud that he stood up when he did, and we'll see if anybody wants to follow his lead, because as I told people out on the social networks, my U.S. senator went to the Senate floor and spent the equivalent of a full half day, like 12 hours, on the Senate floor, filibustering against the U.S. government having the right to carry out drone attacks on our own people. I want you to listen to that thought for a moment. We are talking about the U.S. government having the ability to carry out drone attacks on our own people. And when you ask dear leader President Obama or his top henchman Eric Holder if they would ever use drones on the American people, well, they didn't want to answer the question. And they let Rand Paul stand out there on the Senate floor for hours and hours and hours, and they didn't want to answer the question. And finally, all they said was, no, it's not legal to do. You notice they didn't say they wouldn't do it. They just said it's not legal to do. I mean, if they did it, what's going to happen? Is the United Nations going to talk strongly to them? Is the United Nations going to wag their finger at them, kind of like the way the United Nations is wagging their finger at North Korea? What the hell good is that going to do if you're dead? If you're dead from a drone attack because you might be one of those domestic terrorists, then the United Nations and all their long-winded blowhards and blue berets aren't going to save your ass. So, getting right started, as we always do with This Week in History, we'll go back to something very relevant today, very relevant indeed, and that is this week in 1770. Something that we had called the Boston Massacre, ladies and gentlemen. The Boston Massacre, or called the Incident on King Street by the British, was an incident in March of 1770 in which the British Army soldiers killed 5 civilian men and injured 6 others. How ironic that we're talking about the government killing innocent citizens with drones. And we go back to this week, 243 years ago. You see, British troops had been stationed in Boston in the Massachusetts Bay in order to protect and support Crown-appointed colonial officials attempting to enforce unpopular parliamentary legislation. Amid ongoing tense relations between the citizens and the soldiers, a mob formed, around the British sentry, who was subjected to verbal abuse and harassment. He was eventually supported by 8 additional soldiers who were subjected to verbal threats and thrown objects. So what did they do? They fired into the crowd, of course, without orders, killing at least 3 people at that time and 2 others dying later on from sustained wounds in the incident. We see the crowd eventually dispersed after Acting Governor Thomas Hutchinson promised an inquiry. But he reformed the next day, prompting the troops to withdraw to Castle Island. You see, John Adams, then an attorney, not quite yet an aspiring U.S. president, but then lawyer John Adams was forced to defend the British soldiers. And under the defense of future President John Adams, 6 of the soldiers were acquitted, while the others were convicted of manslaughter and given reduced sentences. And see, depictions, reports, and propaganda about the event, notably the engraving produced by Paul Revere, spread tension throughout the 13 colonies. The event is widely seen as the foreshadowing of the outbreak of the American Revolutionary War 5 years later. And that, my friends, was the Boston Massacre. So we fast forward a few years. This week in 1789, the United States Constitution went into effect. It's obviously that we're not using the damn thing anymore, but back then it was an important document. Now our government officials wipe their asses with the document. Now we'll fast forward all the way up to something that some of our listeners may actually remember. This week in 1933, you can say fascism truly came to America. And see, this is where dear leader Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, seized the gold in the United States, effectively foreclosing on the United States. You see, gold was an obstacle in FDR's path. Why is that, you say? Because even before his inauguration, there were rumors that he had intended to go away from the gold standard and intensify the run on banks and the hoarding of gold. Smart men rushed to gold's defense. A letter was sent to the President-elect Roosevelt in January of 1933, urging him not only to lower tariff barriers to revive trade, but to maintain the gold standard, quote, unflinchingly, unquote. And the letter was signed by a number of prominent economists, mainly the American-Austrian economist Frank Fetter of Princeton. But FDR was very stubborn. He didn't want to listen to the people. Who does that sound like? And he issued a proclamation 80 years ago this week declaring that the possession of gold coins, bullion, or certificates to be unlawful and subject to criminal penalties. Again, stop me if this sounds familiar. People trying to crack down on real money and refusing to admit that our money system is screwed to hell. Finally, about 10 months later, in the beginning of 1934, you had the Gold Reserve Act, whereas all of the gold held by the Federal Reserve Banks was seized by the U.S. Treasury. In return, the banks received something called gold certificates. These could not be exchanged for actual gold, but they merely functioned as a receipt saying we screwed you and robbed your ass blind. You see, by executive decree, Roosevelt reduced the value of the gold dollar to $35, a devaluation of 40%. And Murray Rothbard, another one of those good Austrian economists, described the upshot of FDR's gold confiscation in his publication called A New Liberty. And for A New Liberty, Rothbard said, before 1933, there was an important shackle upon the Federal Reserve's ability to inflate and expand the money supply. Federal Reserve notes themselves were payable in the equivalent weight of gold. The government cannot create new gold at will, but Federal Reserve notes can be issued at will, at virtually zero cost and resources. In 1933, the U.S. government removed the gold on its inflationary potential by shifting to fiat money, to making the paper dollar itself the standard. Paper dollar, paper money that is backed by nothing but the damn quote-unquote goodwill and good word of the government. So we fast forward now to another case you probably have not heard about. And that was 30 years ago today. 30 years ago today was the decision of the Supreme Court case called Briscoe v. LaHue. And see, Briscoe v. LaHue, in a nutshell, allowed police officers to lie and not be punished for it. I say it decided that police officers could not be punished for lying. The common law provided absolute immunity from subsequent damages liability for all persons, government or otherwise, who were integral parts of the judicial process. That's the word put down by the Supreme Court, the Supremes, the guys wearing the black muumuus, saying that they couldn't be held responsible. Saying you cannot punish police officers for lying. So now to bring it all full circle back to this week, I'm sure unless you're living in a cave somewhere in the Middle East, that you have heard about the filibuster by my good U.S. Senator, Dr. Rand Paul. You see, Dr. Rand Paul spent nearly 13 hours, as we say, on the Senate floor conducting an old-fashioned filibuster to try to keep the United States government from having the ability to carry out a drone attack on you in your backyard. And if you didn't have a whole 13 hours to watch the C-SPAN footage, I will give you a slightly condensed version that includes some of the points that he made. On the purpose of the filibuster, Senator Rand Paul began, "I rise today to begin filibuster of John Brennan's nomination for the CIA. And the gentleman from Kentucky said, "I will speak until I can no longer speak. I will speak as long as it takes until the alarm is sounded from coast to coast that our Constitution is important, that your rights to trial by jury are precious, and that no American should be killed by a drone on American soil without first being charged with a crime, without first being found to be guilty by a court of law. That Americans could be killed in a cafe in San Francisco, or in a restaurant in Houston, or at their home in Bowling Green, Kentucky, is an abomination." I can't argue with anything he said there, folks. He went on to talk about why he worries about killing within the United States, because when he asked the president, "Can you kill an American on American soil?" it should have been the easy answer. It's an easy question. It should have been a resounding and unequivocal hell no. But the president's response was, he hasn't killed anyone yet. We're supposed to be comforted by that? The president says, "I haven't killed anyone yet." Whether or not it's true, he goes on to say, "And I had no intention of killing Americans, but I might." Is that enough? Are we satisfied by that? Are we so complacent in this lazy-ass country of ours, where people don't know a damn thing about the Constitution, that they would allow a president to say he might kill Americans? See, there were constitutional grounds for Dr. Rand Paul's objections on the U.S. Senate floor yesterday. "What does the Fifth Amendment say?" he asked. "The Fifth Amendment says that no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury." It's pretty explicit. The Fifth Amendment protects you. It protects you from a king placing you in a tower, but it should also protect you from a president that might kill you with a drone. We were granted due process. It's not always easy to sort out the details of who is a threat. And Senator Rand Paul went on to say the reason he was frustrated with President Obama is because the answer should be so easy. He cannot imagine that he would expressly come forth and say, "No, I will not kill Americans on American soil." We can't understand the president's unwillingness to say it, that he will not kill noncombatants. Think about that. He is unwilling to say on public record that he won't kill you, because that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about someone over in the Middle East or in Africa with a bazooka or a grenade launcher on their shoulders. We're talking about committing lethal force, not being repelled with lethal force. No one argues that point. We're talking about whether you can kill non-combatants, because many of the people being killed overseas, here's the dirty little secret, folks, are non-combatants. We're talking about people who are eating in a cafe or at home, or in a restaurant. And what's really, really disgusting is today, after Dr. Rand Paul gives this 13-hour filibuster, you have spineless people like Lindsey Graham and Senator Juan McCain. Some of you Republicans voted for this guy when he ran for president. I'm glad to say I did not. I know that'll be taken and held against me by the local Republican Party, who's all pissing in their depends right now. But they're listening to the show. We know they're listening to the shows. We see the IP addresses. We see the numbers. But Senator Juan McCain and Senator Amnesty Lindsey Graham started having a fit over Rand Paul and his filibuster. And why in the world, if you're John McCain, would you have a problem with Dr. Rand Paul's filibuster, you ask? Well, John McCain took to the Senate floor earlier today, on Thursday, March 7th, and he said that Rand Paul's filibuster was simply false. One of the Senate's leading hawks, Senator John McCain, is down there standing on the Senate floor today questioning Dr. Rand Paul, saying that Dr. Paul had belittled the growing use of drones to kill terrorism suspects by invoking the name of Jane Fonda and suggesting that a drone could have killed her when she was a protester. But see, Paul had been on the floor for nearly 13 hours hoping to pressure the White House to declare whether or not it might use a drone to kill an American. You would expect maybe some left-leaning Democrats to come to the president's defense, but here comes Lindsey Graham and Juan John McCain. McCain said it was ridiculous and a stretch of the imagination to allege or infer that the president is going to kill somebody who disagrees with his policies. This is how ignorant the people are that we're dealing with, folks. It gets worse. It gets worse. They basically said that Rand Paul was just a young senator, and he didn't know what the hell he was talking about, and that he should shut up and not say these things. The bottom line is, John McCain went on to say that what Rand Paul was doing was just going to be something that got an arousal out of libertarian college students in their dorm rooms. This is what they think of you, folks. If you're a liberty-minded Republican, this is what the top of the Republican Party thinks about you. Now, make no mistake, there are some people in Kentucky who are in the Republican Party who are pretending to be fans of Rand Paul tonight. That's what's funny. And we always say, hey, here's the bandwagon, jump on, there's plenty of room. But the bottom line is, as Mark Twain said, in the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and he's brave and hated and scorned. But when his cause succeeds, the timid will join him, for then it costs nothing to be a patriot. And Mark Twain, Mr. Samuel Clemens, was exactly right about that. And that's what we see today when we go over and see the local Republican Party saying, oh, Rand Paul is on the Senate floor and he's having a filibuster of Obama. And again, if you want to jump on a bandwagon, that's fine. If you want to jump on a bandwagon, there's plenty of room, because I'm sure there's a lot of room to stand up on the other side from Barack Obama. But how do you explain the words from Senator Juan McCain? How do you explain when McCain and Lindsey Graham throw a little temper tantrum and they say that the filibuster is ridiculous? McCain went on to say, we've done a disservice to a lot of Americans by making them think that they're somehow in danger from their own government, but they're not. You ready for this? McCain put it back outward and again said, we're in danger from a long-standing enemy around the world that's hell-bent on our destruction. See, Lindsey Graham, who often moves lockstep with McCain, directly called out some more colleagues who had joined Paul's filibuster. This is an important issue. We should be talking about it, said Lindsey Graham. I welcome a reasoned discussion, but to my Republican colleagues, I don't remember any of you coming down here suggesting that President Bush was going to kill anybody with a drone, which makes no damn sense. So Lindsey Graham is finally admitting that both parties do it? I don't really understand the logic, but then again, it's Lindsey Graham, and there's not usually much logic. So again, continue with the Cliff Notes version, if you will, of Dr. Rand Paul's 13-hour filibuster. Let's listen to his words about the war on terrorism unbound by geography. This is something that should really make the alarm bells go off in our audience. And I know a lot of our audience agrees with what we say. But we know the audience is growing all the time. And we know there are a lot of left-leaning socialists who back dear leader Obama who are out there listening. And we know there are neocons in the party establishment listening. So listen to this. Our alarm bells should go off when people tell you that the battlefield's in America. Why? Because when the battlefield's in America, we don't have due process, Senator Paul says. What they're talking about is they want the laws of war. They call it the laws of war. Another way to put it is martial law. That's what they want in the United States when they say the battlefield is here. When people tell you that America is a battlefield, when they tell you that the battlefield is right here, realize what they are telling you. They're telling you the Bill of Rights does not apply because in the battlefield you do not have due process. And I'm not arguing for that. War is war. War is hell. But we can't have perpetual war. We can't have war that has no temporal limits. And we can't have war that's part of our daily life in our country. And we're going to say from now on in our country, you really don't have the protection of the Bill of Rights. So I think it's incredibly important, said Senator Paul, that we have been kind of blasé about this whole drone strike program, but it's now come home to where we can really think about this, because that's what they are asking to do. I want you guys out there to think about it. You're listening to the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network, and we'll be back after this break.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We do think you can handle the truth, and that was our bottom of the hour musical break. That was We the People by Megadeth. And we opened up the show tonight with one you probably haven't heard before, New World Order by Picus Maximus. So now, reclaiming our time about the Senator Rand Paul filibuster, and I was kind of giving you a Cliff Notes version of it. We left off talking about war on terrorism, unbound by geography. Some of the neocons and the globalist and the socialist Democrat movement alike don't want us to talk about. So we immediately went there, of course. What if there's an attack on U.S. soil? Dr. Rand Paul said, no one is questioning whether the U.S. can repel an attack. No one is questioning whether your local police can repel an attack. Anybody involved in lethal force, the lethal doctrine in our country, has always been that the government can repel lethal attacks. The problem is that the drone strike program is often not about combatants. It's about people who may or may not be conspiring, but they're not in combat. They're in a car, or they're in their house, or they're in a restaurant or a cafe. If we're going to bring that standard to America, what I'm doing down here today is asking the president to be explicit. If you're going to have a standard that you're going to kill noncombatants in America, come forward and please say it clearly so we know what we're up against. If you're not going to do it, come up with the easy answer. I'm not going to kill noncombatants. That would have been easy for him to say. And I really won't take exception with Dr. Rand Paul here. I just don't think that our government has the balls to come out and say that. It's the whole by design thing. We got to keep the good cop, bad cop going, where you have Republicans, if you want to call them that, in name only, Juan McCain, and little girly Lindsey Graham coming out and say, oh, Americans don't have to worry. You're never going to be killed by drones. Don't worry about that. There's nothing for you to worry about. Isn't there? And as Dr. Rand Paul went on to say in his filibuster, I'm a Republican. I didn't vote for or support the president either time, but I admire particularly that in 2007, when he first ran, he stood up and said, we are not tortured people. That's not what America does. How does a president's mind work, though? The president seems so honorable, seems so concerned with our rights, seems so concerned with the right not to have your phone be tapped. Now says it's no big concern whether you're killed without a trial. The leap of logic is so fantastic as to boggle the mind. Where is the Barack Obama of 2007? Has the presidency so transformed him that he has forgotten his moorings, forgotten what he stood for? Civil libertarians once expected more from the president. Maybe some civil libertarians did, my friends, but I never did. We'll go to our phone lines. Here in Louisville, Kentucky, I think we've got our good friend Andy on the line. Are you there, brother?
This is your good friend Paul on the
Paul,
line.
Paul, wrong phone number, brother. I got the phone numbers mixed up. They were the wiretappers. What's going on, Paul?
I think that Obama doesn't really deserve credit for being such a bad guy. I really don't.
This should be good.
Yeah, well, he's just the latest in a series of the ruling elite, so he's simply playing his role.
Agree.
And but I think that him doing what he's been told to do by his handlers. And George Bush the shrub in his second term, I think he too kind of was being told what to do. You know, the ruling elite are getting a little bit antsy about the stuff that they've apparently been doing to us, and they have sensed rightfully so. They were getting kind of fed up with it, so they're getting worried.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually find that to be helping myself.
Well, Paul,
really
if we get down to the puppets at the end of the marionette strings, and we pretend for a minute that our executive branch and our judicial branch and the little moo-moos and our legislative branch mean something, isn't it sufficient process for the executive branch to just determine if someone's a terrorist and should be killed?
It sure is expeditious and efficient, isn't it? Doesn't have to be right, does it?
It can be speedy. There's just no trial.
Yeah, right to a speedy death without any type of trial.
And the thing about it is we have very few people standing up with Rand Paul on the Senate floor, Paul. I mean, as he says, if there were an ounce of courage in that body, he'd be joined by many other senators saying that they will not tolerate this. Maybe six or seven of them came to the floor. You had Lindsey Graham and John McCain and others were too busy out filleting Obama at some dinner under the table. And if they'd come together in bipartisan fashion and tell the president, like Paul says, tell any president that you don't have the authority to kill Americans without a trial. It just, this used to be conspiracy theory stuff, Paul. When I talked about this 2 years ago, they thought I was on Star Trek or I was coming from outer space with this. This would never happen in our United States. It couldn't happen here, some of the famous last words.
I think you're headed on that particular thought, Dale. I think you're right on track. I've had a recent conversation with the wife of a friend of mine, and she's kind of liberal leaning in her viewpoints.
Yeah.
And she thinks Rand Paul is just a nut. She's just a nut.
Yeah.
And I tell you how I translate that.
Yeah.
I translate that is that Rand Paul is saying things that scare a bunch of people to death, not because he's crazy, but because what he is saying is going to really upset their apple cart should he prevail. And people who bought into this liberal hypocrisy, this liberal double standard way of living, yeah, I can see where they would get upset if they believed that their whole world was about to come crumbling down should a guy like Rand Paul prevail. And Paul should be worried.
Maybe they think he's crazy. Maybe they think he's a nut because when you hear the truth so infrequently, the truth become lies and lies become the truth.
Well, and also on calling him crazy, that, again, is just another way that they do to try to marginalize him. So they're judging him on the basis of their personal prejudices, and they're not really listening. And this lady here, she absolutely has her brain checked out because she's already formed an opinion.
Right.
Don't discuss facts and reason with her because it will just confuse things, and she doesn't want to get confused. Her personal religion, and that's what I have to call it because – she is so married to certain liberal ideas that it's just identical to a religion. She doesn't want it challenged. She doesn't want it challenged. So,
I hope some of these people were watching last night, and I think one of the best things that he did, and nobody knew how long that Rand Paul would be able to stand up there on the floor without having some kind of a catheter to save him or anything, but the fact is he went into prime time, which forced, quote-unquote, some of the mainstream channels to actually cover it in tiny little bits and pieces. And I think the filibuster is good for at least a couple of reasons. And first of all, it's because it's a filibuster. The claim that the U.S. Senate is somehow the world's great deliberative body has been laughable for so long. The Senate mostly rubber stamps the edicts of the president, no matter which president's there, as long as they're the same party. And when the majority is in a different party, rarely is anything more than token resistance offered. So this is made obvious by the fact that filibusters are so rare that people don't know what they are. And the Senate was created supposed to be a check and balance on the foreign and domestic policy of the presidents. But we hardly ever see, or until this date, maybe the last 20 years, haven't seen anything like that out of the Senate, Paul.
Well, I find it interesting that that the mainstream media wants to characterize Rand Paul's filibuster as a Republican thing.
Oh, yeah.
It really isn't a Republican thing. It's a Rand Paul thing. Having got to learn about Rand Paul many, many years before before his name was even uttered on the national scene, Rand Paul is he's a independent political guy.
Oh yeah.
And let's face it, he had to in our two-party monopoly that we actually have here. He had to choose one of the sides. He chose the Republican side as his label for marketing purposes.
Right. But
the Republicans are frustrated with him because he doesn't fall into lockstep. They want him to fall into lockstep, just like the vast majority of Democrat elected officials fall into lockstep.
Now, you're right, Paul. Yeah, and what I was going to say is not only does your friend think is that he's a nut and crazy, but we had a lot of these Republican establishment people. And see, I don't mind taking shots at them because I'm not running for political office, and we've already seen the witch hunt that they put on with me and my Liberty friends. So I just tell it like it is, and we know they're listening because we see the IP addresses and see the numbers. But it goes without saying that these same Republican Party people in Kentucky thought Rand was a nut. They thought he was so much a nut that they made sure they put up their golden boy at the time, Charles Merwin Grayson IV, and he got his ass handed to him. And Charles Merwin Grayson tucked tail out of his existing Secretary of State race, ran away from that, quit. He quit the office like Sarah Palin quit as governor. He's a quitter. And he ran to Harvard in Massachusetts. So he got his ass kicked by a true constitutional Republican in the Goldwater-Reagan Taft form, and he ran his ass out of the state. And now he's helping fundraise for Democrat PAC groups. And that was their golden boy because they all thought Rand Paul was a nut and crazy. But the funny thing, Paul, when I really started to see that they wanted to come along but they were scared to, was January of 2010 when I was sitting in the front row and I was helping with the event where, I don't know if you were at this event, it was at the fairgrounds. I know you know the fairgrounds very well. And Dr. Rand Paul, this was a Senate fundraiser, and Dr. Ron Paul and Dr. Rand Paul were there, and the room started filling out with a bunch of neocons, and it was almost like they acted like they were at the adult bookstore, and they were just kind of hiding in the corner, and they didn't want to associate with each other. It's kind of like two Baptists at the liquor store, didn't want to act like they knew each other. And they were all sneaking in, because as one of my friends, who was a high-ranking member of the Republican Party of Kentucky at the time, said, we like Trey Grayson, but we know that Rand Paul is the best man for the job. And I don't know, were you at that event, Paul?
No, that was I viewed that as a partisan event. And I'm not much into partisans. I hate both of them just about equally.
Well, it was only a partisan event because a lot of the partisans invited themselves. It was almost like our recent, I don't talk about Hollywood much, but I guess we had this recent actress, Jennifer, what's her name, from Louisville. So now she goes up there and wins an Oscar. So now all the Hollywood elite want to sort of kind of embrace her because they want to act like they're part of her success. And that's what was going on that night. I mean, Rand Paul, like you said, has always been independently thinking. I mean, we knew about this guy. I'm using the collective we, my friends down at Take Back Kentucky, years and years ago. I can remember sitting around with my good friend and political mentor, the late, great Norm Davis, and my friends John Riley and other guys that are no longer with us. And we kept thinking, hey, wonder if we can get Dr. Ron Paul's son to run for public office. You know, he's an optometrist in Bowling Green. And we were talking about that years and years ago. He ran an organization down in Bowling Green called Kentucky Taxpayers United. And he would regularly present Taxpayers Friend Awards to state legislators. And he ran that 19 years ago. That's how we knew about Rand Paul back then. So it's kind of interesting to see him get to the Senate floor and do a kind of a Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Because like I said earlier from the Twain quote, it's really easy to be a patriot when there's nothing there to lose, you know. When the cause succeeds and the timid will join in, because it costs nothing to be a patriot. Then, am I right, Paul?
That's a good analogy, Dale. Because anyone with just an eighth grade education can take a look, and if they just stop and take 10 seconds to think about the person. Who are now sitting in our history books as being our patriots, they put a lot on the line. They put a lot. And they took a chance when no one else was willing to take a chance. Kind of reminds me of today's people in our society. They go around saying such crazy things such as, I wish I'd invested in McDonald's when it was a young company.
Yeah.
And those are the very same type of people that when McDonald's was a young company, they would have been saying, I don't want to invest in that. It's too risky. Too risky. How do I know it's going to succeed? And to be a patriot from that era, those people were the ones who invested in a young McDonald's. They took a chance. They took a huge chance. They put it on the line. They put everything on the line.
No,
I
agree.
Service.
Yep.
So I agree on the patriot analogy because, unfortunately, today a large part of our society, they won't even put stuff on. They won't put everything at risk even for themselves. So I guess it's just not realistic for us to expect them to put everything on the line for the greater good.
Well, Paul, the funny thing is our good friend Ed Martin, who hosts the show in this chair here on Monday and Tuesday nights with our president of the show, Ed Springsteen, Mr. Ed Martin, he and I were talking on the social networks yesterday about this, and he talked about the same thing, how he was glad to stand with Rand Paul back in the day. And it's funny because a lot of people are now posting their pictures of where they had pictures of, with Rand Paul. And like I said, we knew Rand back way back in the day. And I kidded around with our good friend Martin online. I said, well, remember, Ed, remind these people who thought that Rand Paul was a nut, remind them about their golden boys, how they had their own little mount, they had their own little memorial, if you will, for lack of a better term, because these guys' political careers are gone. But they made up their own Mount Everest of people like David Williams and Richie Farmer and Trey Grayson. And look how that's worked out for them. And Ed said, well, you know, live and learn. It took some of these people a little bit longer to come around than did the rest of us.
Well, and some of those people are simply hangers-on. They, as you just articulated, they simply want to be seen with the fad of the moment. But those aren't the people that are going to be the leaders. Those are the people that are actually, on a good day, they might be a follower. But for the most part, they don't have the best interest of the greater good. They're simply looking at it from a self-interest point of view. And so they're not willing to put anything at risk. They're not going to put anything at risk. Nope.
I agree. We're running a little short on time, Paul, but we definitely appreciate you coming on here and keep speaking the truth out there. Any other closing comments you want to get in for our audience?
No, I'm going to let you have the last word because, after all, this is Thursday Night Truth with Dale the Truth. So go for it.
I appreciate it, Paul. We appreciate you coming on the show, folks. And with that, we will take this quick message.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we're back, and even in the waning moments, I believe that we got our good friend Frank wanting to do a drive-by here from the People's Republic of Vietnam. Frank, are you on the air?
Yes, sir. I don't have a...
Frank, you're almost too late, buddy. You almost didn't get on the train on the way to the concentration camp. What can I do for you tonight?
Well, I don't have enough ammo to shoot all the people I want to shoot right now.
metaphorically speaking, he means, folks. Don't be
metaphorically speaking.
Don't be sending
exactly
that drone
right.
My way. Don't put that on me, Ricky Bobby.
No, oh no. Well, I apologize. I have no idea what you've already talked about tonight. Of course, what I want to talk about is the way that the industrial hit bill was shot down in.
Yep, that's perfect
time. This week.
Comment about that, Frank. We had not gotten to talk to the state legislature yet. We had a couple more issues I want to hit on tonight. One of them is the state legislature wrap-up, and I didn't get to do that yet because we've been waxing poetic about Rand Paul and the filibuster and the rest of the senators who have no testicles. So tell the audience the latest on our hemp battle.
Well, the short story is that we've only got, like, no days left. We might have part of one day left to try to get the industrial hemp bill in front of the House, but our House Speaker, Greg Stumbo, is refusing to allow this bill to be put to a floor vote. It passed through the Senate Agriculture Committee unanimously with no votes. It passed through the House Ag Committee with only one no vote,
yep.
And it went through the Senate with only six no votes. And we believe it would pass through the House with flying colors if it were allowed to be brought to a vote.
Well, Mr. Stumbo, I guess I can call him by his official title. I don't even like calling him Mr. But Mr. Stumbo was on the Mandy Connell show this morning, and I know you were talking about that a little bit online earlier today. I was actually in the car listening to it live, and I wish I had had time to call in. I didn't want to listen while I was driving down the road because I might have just steered right off onto one of the into one of the ditches when I listened to this guy because he was a complete blithering idiot. I mean, he sat there and talked in circles.
She destroyed him, didn't she?
She's really good at going after the Democrats. I wish she would go after the neocons. I tried to get her to do that a year ago. She wouldn't listen to me, Frank, but that's another story for another day. But, yeah, she did destroy him, and he just kept talking around himself. He couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag, and she would say stuff like, just let them have the vote. And he would say, well, they already got the right to do this, Mandy. They can already grow it. But yet he doesn't want to have a vote because he has concerns about the bill. Why would you not allow a vote on a bill that you think has problems with it if you say we can already do it without the bill?
Right. And, you know, the whole thing is this bill doesn't legalize industrial hemp. It
right.
just sets the framework for the bureaucracy and the legal system when it comes to time to actually grow industrial hemp. We're just trying to get ahead of the curve a little bit. And I couldn't believe Greg Stumbo had the nerve to say, well, as soon as the feds legalize it, then we can't regulate it because there's no laws against it. That they're just going to turn industrial hemp loose full bore once the feds legalize it. But, you know, there's two things wrong with that, or probably, you know, 100 things wrong with that. But the
right.
two things that come to my mind are, one, why are we asking for permission from the federal government to grow something? And two, who believes that our state government's not going to try to regulate it and tax it?
Well, why can the government? I mean, we just got done talking about the drones. It's kind of like, why can the government ask me what I need an AR-15 for, but they can buy up thousands and thousands of armored vehicles with gun holes in them? I mean, why can the government help get the drugs into this country, but then say we can't grow hemp because marijuana, which doesn't get along with hemp, might be grown in the area? I mean, it's ridiculous. I've come to these airwaves, Frank, and talked about this. We better stop bringing in sugar. Well, we know that the soft drinks that I'm trying to swear off, I haven't been drinking the soft drinks this calendar year, but we know they're not soft at all. We know they're filled with all kinds of crap that's not real sugar. And we better not allow real sugar in because somebody might try to hide cocaine in the real sugar.
Well,
we better not allow the chemistry department down at U of L, because I can drive by there and see the science buildings. We better not allow the chemistry department to operate because they may have meth labs inside.
It's the whole running with scissors argument. Somebody might do something, therefore nobody gets to do anything.
Yeah.
It's wrong. It's just wrong.
No, I agree. I am not that positive or that upbeat about the hemp bill, because it does seem like you say that we are really running out of sand in the hourglass. Do you have any update for us on either of these other bills that I know that we've been following at Take Back Kentucky, like the fusion centers or the religious rights?
No, I don't know anything about anything else.
Okay.
I've been so focused on this one issue. And so what I've been trying to do is rally the troops on Facebook, you know, online, and sending out messages for people to call in. I've been trying to send out ways, you know, to put pressure on Greg Stumbo. You know, with the Internet, the beauty of the Internet is you can expose these guys, because you can go to their hometown newspapers now. Their hometown newspapers are online. So you can actually comment directly on their hometown newspapers, you know, blog sites or whatever.
Yeah, you're right.
The people in their hometowns will see this.
They're running a Ducky and Heidi in one way, Frank, but these people like McKee, isn't he the one who ran the House committee and tried to keep us away from it? And McKee and Stumbo, nobody runs against them. Not one Democrat or Republican.
No, that's not true. Somebody ran against McKee, Brian. I say Lutz, but it may be Lutz. I think it's Lutz.
Okay.
Brian Lutz. He's a good guy.
A very likable
guy. A good conservative. And my understanding is the Democrats poured a ton of money into his race to keep McKee in power.
No, I do remember that now. And like I said, on the other hand, when they run, how much support do they get? And we know that Stumbo is out there in Prestonsburg, where there's a big drug problem, a big illegal drug problem. This goes right back to the heart of it sounds cliche, but the argument about how bootleggers and churches work together to keep drugs illegal.
And I can remember, listen, my grandmother was from Prestonsburg. I can remember the wet, dry direct the elections up there, and it was vicious. You know, the whole boogie thing about if you allow the county to go wet, it's going to go straight to hell. Well, guess what? It went wet and nothing happened.
I agree, Frank. You got a couple of closing comments. We appreciate you weighing in tonight, brother. That's our good friend Frank from the People's Republic of Vietnam. And the other closing issue, we're probably getting ready to go into overdrive. So if you're listening to archives, that's okay, because you'll hear the whole show regardless. And we are very thankful for the hundreds and hundreds, sometimes thousands of people who listen to the show in archives. The one thing that we do want to mention tonight, before we run out of time, is there's a gentleman named Andrew Schottner, and Andrew had wanted to come on the show tonight, and he said, unfortunately, it was going to be a late night for him at work. I know he does some work down for the, I believe, for the Republican majority in the state Senate, but I don't want to speak out of turn. But I know he said that it was going to be a late night at work for him, and he would do his best to call in. So we're sorry that Andrew couldn't call in, but he did want everybody to know that the Louisville Young Republicans are having their elections this coming Monday night, Monday, March 11th. If you're in the Louisville, Kentucky area, I know it's kind of like inside baseball, but it's important. If you're in the Louisville, Kentucky area, the elections are this Monday night at Biernos by the Bridge, 6:30 p.m. And basically people can pay their dues if they want to pay the relatively small dues to cover the Young Republican membership for the year. I'm kind of torn on that because we know that most of that money goes to the senior party, and we see the way the senior party screws that money up. But all that being said, if you pay your dues, you can then vote in their elections. And Andrew Schottner is going to be running for chairman of the Louisville Young Republicans. And this is a group that 12 years ago now, 11 or 12 years ago, hard to believe it's been that long, I was the chairman of this group. Back then we were called the Jefferson County Young Republicans. And now Andrew Schottner is going to be running for chairman of the Louisville Young Republicans, and he tells me, I'm reading straight from his message to me today, that he is a truly liberty candidate for this position, and he, of course, is also vice chairman of the Louisville Tea Party, and he says that if he is elected to chairman of the Louisville Young Republicans, he will do everything in his power to promote the ideals of liberty. So there is that. We appreciate him sending us that message. Folks, we're all out of time. We're into overdrive. The bottom line is this. I said this earlier, this goes back from local to state to national government. We've been fighting with the national government, and I'm very proud of my Senator Rand Paul, who has been speaking on the Senate floor, filibustering up against the U.S. government's right to carry out drone strikes against American people. Just think about that for a minute. Will you tell your senators to follow his lead? Also, here in the Louisville, Kentucky area again, my Louisville councilwoman, Marilyn Parker, she has rejected any government pension benefits. Will you tell your local politicians to follow her lead? The bottom line is this, folks. When you get into this filibuster, I'm glad that Rand Paul has found the issue that he's going to go to the mat over with the statist, because some people may not like him. He kind of divides them in their liberty community. People say, oh, he's not his father. But he's still one of a tiny handful of politicians in Washington, D.C. who's willing to say, enough is enough about you trying to destroy the Bill of Rights. His peculiarity and commitment on this issue is very important and needs to be admired. And the fact that he stands nearly alone should frighten anybody who is uninformed enough to think there's still a functioning system of checks and balances in Washington. Paul's stance should serve as a source of everlasting shame to the so-called progressives who don't give a damn or care one iota about human rights, quote-unquote democracy, or decent government. As long as one of their own is the current dictator, they could care less about standing up to the New World Order. It's up to you folks to stand up and fight it and tell it death to the New World Order. Have a good night, folks.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.